if you're trying to get strong on the horse, if you're trying to get fit on the horse, you're just trying to like overcome so many more hurdles. And then also too, like if we taught young riders these principles of like, this is how you strength train, this is the condition, like these are the basics of strength and conditioning, these are the basics of getting fit, this is how you develop a training program, how much better would they be able to train their horses? Because it's the same thing at the end of the day. Those training principles cross from one species to another. Like we're both mammals, you know, there's very, like we're both physiologically very similar in how we operate. Obviously horses aren't on all fours and we're not, but beyond that, like our muscle, our cardiovascular system operates very similarly. So the training principles that we apply as we're learning to get fit ourselves as athletes, we can cross that over to how we train horses. My name is Katie Wood, and I am a physiotherapist. I run a company called The Equestrian Physio, where essentially we, like the main mandate is empowering horses and empowering riders to approach the sport, you know, to keep it on par with modern athletics, to actually approach the sport like we are athletes and not necessarily approaching it in a way where, you know, we're kind of complacent in our own athleticism and in our own role in this partnership.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I always get made fun of from my friends because I grew up playing polo, right? And so, you know, I always thought it was hard, but my friends would see me and say, dude, you're not even doing 10% of the work. It's all a horse. I appreciate your take.
Well, and that doesn't mean that riding isn't hard, but it's just, you know, a lot of the time, riders that I work with, riders that I see, and just in the industry in general, we think that riding is enough to keep us fit enough to ride. And that's just so far from the truth, unfortunately. Riding isn't even really enough to keep us meeting activity guidelines based on, you know, what the standard is for what we're supposed to be doing to stay, you know, like generally healthy. For the average person who's just a recreational amateur rider, just riding isn't even enough to hit those standards, which is kind of like 150 minutes a week of cardio activity and two strength training sessions a week hitting most of your muscle groups. It's a fantastic outlet, but from a purely athletic standpoint, you know, we need to show up for our horses the same way our horses are showing up for us. And that's kind of like, that's my mandate a lot of the time, is like treat ourselves as athletes because our horses are showing up as athletes, whether they kind of agree to it or not, so that we owe it to them.
So true. Let's take a step back. How did you combine these passions of yours? Like, how did this all get started from your perspective? Like, what was the inception where you're like, I like horses, I like physio, I like this, and then you brought it all together? How did that all get started?
Yeah, so my journey into the physiotherapy profession was, you know, pretty far from linear, unfortunately, but we always had, you know, like many routes to the same place. So essentially, when I was an undergraduate student, I was hell-bent on being a veterinarian. So as a lot of horse-crazy kids are, right, I grew up breeding and training Rocky Mountain horses, which are their gated breed. That was my family's business, is that we had this breeding farm between my grandparents on my dad's side and my parents. And, you know, my grandparents mostly had all the broodstock. My mom did all the training. And that was my upbringing in the world of horses. And then, you know, as I kind of like grew a little bit older, kind of outgrew the main pony club stuff and wanted to get a little more competitive, I started dabbling into eventing and really enjoyed that. Actually took the Rockies eventing, which was an interesting experiment. Gated horses can jump. They can trot too, but you just don't really teach them to gate. And actually I had my little gated horse one time get a 9 on his trot, and I was really impressed by that.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. I was like, look at that. He's got a 9 on his trot and he's supposed to be gated, but here we go. So then, like, you know, obviously, like growing up riding and competing and going to university, I was like, well, I really want to continue working with animals, and I really wanted to work with sport horses. That was kind of my mandate. And I love the sciences. I love sports science and all of that stuff. So that's what I wanted to do. So I did my undergraduate in animal biology at the University of Guelph. I applied to veterinary school when I was in my undergrad and wasn't successful, just, you know, mainly like marks. It's just so incredibly competitive. And, you know, like high 80s aren't enough, apparently. So not even enough to get an interview. And so then I decided, well, if I'm going to keep trying for this vet thing, then I need to get a master's degree, because essentially I was at a point where my undergraduate marks just weren't going to be enough. And so I needed to apply in a different pool, like a graduate pool, in order to somewhat be competitive. So I did my master's degree in equine bioscience, also at the University of Guelph, and I was mostly studying like equine metabolic syndrome. And at the time, and during the first year of my master's, unfortunately, I got in a pretty bad car accident when I was actually on my way out to the barn to just do some chores. I was barn sitting for my coach, and I got hit head on, and it was, you know, like 4 days in the hospital, surgery, and then it was about like 6 months recovery just to kind of get over that initial, like, the concussion symptoms and the orthopedic injuries and like rehabbing the broken bones and all of that stuff. Physio, I think I'd only ever been seen a chiro once and I didn't have a great experience. I'd never really worked with any other healthcare rehab professionals other than, like, you know, your yearly checkup. And so I really got a lot of experience within that first year of my recovery working with physiatrists, neurooptometrists, psychologists, physiotherapists, massage therapists, all of these different professionals learning about how the rehab world works. Unfortunately, it did also derail kind of my chances of getting into veterinary school because of the concussion symptoms and everything. Like, I just couldn't do what I needed to do in order to be competitive. A lot of my research projects were like scrolling a lot of little numbers on screens. And when you have a concussion, you can't sit there and stare at a screen and scroll little numbers. Your brain just can't process it very well. And it was until you like rehab it properly. And so that just really, like, it was kind of everything I could do to just finish my master's at the time. So I got that done. And then I was a little bit like on the fence of, okay, now what do I do? I ended up working at a veterinary clinic that I'd done some volunteering with when I was an undergrad for about 3 years. So it was an equine sports medicine clinic. And that's when, you know, I was on the fence during that time of like, do I try one more time to be a veterinarian? Because the other thing is that in Ontario, you only have 4 tries to get into the school and I'd already used 3 of them.
Oh, wow.
So I only had one more shot before they would have cut me off. And like, I would have either had to, you know, like mortgage everything I owned to try and go international or given up on that dream. Or, you know, I had started to like research more into this rehab stuff. And really at the end of the day, when I was researching a lot into physio, the main goal was, oh, I want to become a physiotherapist to be an equine rehab practitioner. And so I did. So I did the prerequisites. I went back to school for a couple extra courses, did the prerequisites, got into the physiotherapy program, you know, thanks to my master's marks as well for that, and went through the 2-year program. And that, you know, initially when I got in, I had always been in the mindset of, well, I'm just going to like practice humans as little as possible and like mainly be an equine rehab therapist. So I was going to do the physiotherapy education, then do my diploma in equine rehab and just focus on horses. Yeah. And what I kind of learned and what I kept uncovering is like learning more and more about sports science, about modern athletics, about all of these principles, I started to realize how poorly these things were actually being incorporated into the equestrian industry. And that's when I kind of decided, okay, well, we need someone to bring these principles forward. And so I decided that that was going to be me. And I, once I graduated, I started kind of the equestrian physio, and I've just been building it and trying to put out the education and trying to really push modern athletics into equestrian sport and like encourage riders to actually rehab their own injuries and address themselves as athletes ever since. And so, yeah, that's kind of my story. I did do my diploma in equine rehab, and I do still like, I do horses, but rather than that being the ultimate goal now, I think I'd like to eventually move to kind of a 50-50 caseload of horses and humans.
Wow. That's what a great story of like, honestly,
that's a long-winded story, but
no. First of all, we have a lot of time. So, long-winded is welcome. Second, I think it's also really, it's really great that you saw the opportunity to do 2 things that you really liked, right? And one of them with the horses and the other with humans. And it's so important to have people like you to really push the sport forward. So my question there is, how did you see that opportunity? Like, how did you see that there was no one really doing what you were doing, you know, a few years ago?
Yeah. So I think the more I learned through physio school and through my own continuing education and, you know, like diving more and more into different sports and different sports science avenues, I just started to realize how much of a hole there was in the education among equestrians. And that's not their fault, right? Like, our coaches know what they know, and then they tried to pass that down to us. But unfortunately, there's a lot of missing pieces in terms of like actually incorporating, you know, athletic principles, training principles, tissue healing principles, timelines, you know, all of these things into the way that we actually develop our horses and develop ourselves as riders. You know, like one thing that I, looking back, when I was, you know, a kid and learning to ride, like I was always so frustrated because I never thought that I was a natural rider. I always felt like, you know, I couldn't quite get it. I would get thrown off balance. I could never see the stride, like all of these things that just wouldn't come into place for me versus, you know, I'd look at my friends and they'd just seem to get it more naturally. And so it was difficult. But looking back, you know, now I kind of look at that and go, well, most of them did other sports. Most of them cross-trained. Most of them did other things. And I wonder, was that simply because they were more natural athletes, or did all of that cross training make them better riders? And so I look at this now and I look at young equestrians and I wonder, like, how much faster could we develop them? How much better could we develop them? How much better could we, you know, kind of forego some of the frustrations of being a young rider if we taught them to train their bodies off the horse? To build the building blocks off the horse, to build their muscles, to build their cardiovascular system, to build their motor control, their balance, all of this stuff off the horse. So that when you get on the horse, you already have all of the pieces and you're simply putting it together, right? It's not nearly as big of a challenge if you're already strong, you're already well-controlled, you're already well-balanced, you're already well-coordinated to put it together on the horse versus if you're trying to get strong on the horse, if you're trying to get fit on the horse, you're just trying to like overcome so many more hurdles. And then also too, like if we taught young riders these principles of like, this is how you strength train, this is the condition, like these are the basics of strength and conditioning, these are the basics of getting fit, this is how you develop a training program, how much better would they be able to train their horses? Because it's the same thing at the end of the day. Those training principles cross from one species to another. Like we're both mammals, you know, there's very, like we're both physiologically very similar in how we operate. Obviously horses aren't all fours and we're not, but beyond that, like our muscle, our cardiovascular system operates very similarly. So the training principles that we apply as we're learning to get fit ourselves as athletes, we can cross that over to how we train horses. And if we learned that as young riders, you know, how much better would be, we could make the sport overall.
Wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, like, the way that you could, that you train yourself is similar to the way you should train or could train a horse. So our cardiovascular systems are similar like that? Like, there's...
Well, I would say the horses is way better than ours, but...
Yeah, fair enough.
In terms of how it's how the principles of conditioning work, yes, and how the principles of training work, yes. You know, like even for, so I gave this, I was working with a client the other day and we were chatting about, you know, like some of the basics of strength and conditioning simply being, you know, like sets and reps, like how when you go to a gym and you're doing a certain exercise, you typically program that based on a number of sets that you do and a number of reps that you do. And so if you're doing 3 sets of 10 with 20 pounds, say something like that. Usually we're also kind of regulating that based on, we want to take ourselves pretty close to failure in order to drive our system, drive our muscles to actually stimulate change, right? Because if we're always playing in our comfort zone, our body has no reason to change. Mm-hmm. And so wait, like say you're squatting and, you know, for example, say you can squat comfortably 100 pounds on your back for like 5 reps. And by the 6th rep, you're like, it's starting to fall apart here because my body is pretty much like at capacity. So your form just kind of like goes to shit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like 5 reps is like 80% of what I can do. The 6th rep looks like shit. And by the 7th rep, you're probably not even going to be able to lift that weight. We can apply this. So then, yeah, say for example, you know, you can do 5 reps at like 80% of your max. And so then you do 3 sets of that, right? You're 3 or 4 sets, like you'll do 5 reps, then you'll take a rest and do 5 reps and take a rest, then do 5 reps, take a rest. We can apply this to the way that we train our horses as well. So for example, I told this client, like, imagine you are practicing a shoulder in and you have like a young horse that they're just starting to learn rattle work. They don't necessarily get it. They don't necessarily have the strength to carry their body in that like lateral crossover position for very long. And so you try it. And by the 3rd or 4th stride of practicing this shoulder in, it starts to fall apart. Either their brain gets scrambled or their muscle gets tired or something like that. And so, you know, okay, like 3 to 4 strides, that's our maximum. So maybe you set this up as sets and reps. You say, okay, I'm going to practice 3 strides of shoulder in, and then we're going to go back to the straight, and then they're going to get like 10 strides of either a walk or like just going on the straight and taking a break. Then you're going to do another 3 sets, and you program that for a certain number of sets. And that way you've tracked it so that the next time you go to practice shoulder in, you know what you did last time. You know, you did 5 sets of 3 strides. And so you can do maybe 6 sets of 3 strides, or you can try to do 5 sets of 4 strides today. You could push it to the next step and know that you're kind of progressively loading this horse to be able to tolerate more and more. And it's not just like aimlessly, whimsically, you know, mulling around. Like, you're actually approaching this with a plan based on that overload principle. Does that make sense? I don't know if that was just rambly or...
No, I love it. I think it made a lot of sense. And honestly, when you were talking about like the putting sets and reps to horses out, it like kind of clicked for me. I was like, wait, that of course makes sense. Like, at the end of the day, like you're trying to work your horse to get a little bit better every day, right? Like,
exactly.
We go out and we train our horses, right? We ride them around in a circle or whatever you're doing. And you have to make it so that they're also getting a little bit better, especially, you know, I'm thinking about, I live here in Denver and they're taking the polo ponies out of yes. pasture. Right. And so yeah. they let them rest for 7-8 months. They get a little fat and chunky and cute, and the summer rolls around and they're like, all right, it's time to get back. And, you know, it's the same concept, right? Of course I see this as like athletes just taking an off season, and then bringing them back to an athlete is a lot easier than if you're trying to take something like perhaps a horse that's never been an athlete to be an athlete. Yes. Makes sense.
Yeah. No, and that's true. Like your body has these processes kind of learned already, so it's easier to like redevelop them. For example, like I have a friend of mine who is he's a physiotherapist, but he's also a power lifter, and he has this autoimmune condition. And last year around this time, or I guess around January it was, his autoimmune condition flared up quite badly, and he was actually in the ICU on life support for about, I think he was on life support for about a month, and he was about like 3 months in the hospital. Oh. And his body basically just fed on his muscles. So they couldn't feed him because he was so sick. His body actually couldn't be fed. So he basically just lived off of his own muscle. He lost about 40, 50 pounds of muscle in that time. And since he got out of the hospital, like he had to relearn to walk, relearn to talk, relearn to all of these, do these things. But in the last year, he's already gotten back to like, you know, being able to squat like, you know, a couple hundred pounds, being able to deadlift, you know, like several plates of several weight plates. Like he's gotten back to that because his body and his brain knows how to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, like, it doesn't mean that the journey was easy.
Totally. Oh my God.
So he's been able to, like, the average person can't build that back that fast. And he has been able to, simply just because his body already knew how. But, it's similar for like, if you take a thoroughbred that's been fit, you know, a thoroughbred that raced at 2, 3, and 4, and then maybe you gave them a year off the track, and then now you're trying to restart them to event or whatever. And so you can get them fit quite quickly. But the thing is, though, we have to remember that different systems get fit at different paces. So your cardiovascular system can get fit quite quickly. Your bones, your muscles, and your ligaments and your tendons take much longer to condition. This is why I often see like new runners come in with like shin splints, for example, or with like Achilles pain, for example, because their cardio system, you know, they said, I want to do a marathon, which is fantastic. But then their cardio system adapted quite quickly to them doing a certain pace and running a certain distance. But their Achilles tendon and their shins, so their shin bones, did not adapt that quickly. And so now they're constantly overloading certain tissue types, even though their cardio system can handle it. I find horses are similar, and this is where we sometimes run into certain overload injuries, like splints, like buctions, like, you know, tendinopathies, desmopathies, all those kinds of things. Because they're bred to be so incredibly fit. Like, polo ponies are bred for a purpose. Thoroughbreds are bred for a purpose. They're bred to perform that task. And so they're very good at it. But the rest of the body takes time to condition. And you have to monitor that closely, so that just because they're cardiovascularly fit doesn't mean that that the rest of their system is capable of that, and that you're not potentially overloading their bones or overloading their ligaments. And that is going to be different for each one as well. So that's why it's a lot of monitoring, and it's a lot of listening to them and listening to their body language and listening to, like, watching their capacity for them to tell you when they're at 80%, when they're at 90%, when they're capped out.
What are those signals that you look for? Like, how do you assess? Like, obviously every horse is different, every person is different. Mm-hmm. We're all little unique snowflakes out in the world.
Yep.
and so I'm curious, like, how do you approach an eval, right? Like, how do you approach, like, these signals? Because let's say I'm a rider and I come in and my horse is just, I don't know, something's wrong with my horse and I don't really know what it is. And you ask me, well, what has your horse been telling you? Like, what, when does it quit doing this? And when does it do that? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, so what are those signals that riders should be looking for in a horse?
Yeah. So I will start like on the human side of things, when we're performing an exercise, for example, and I want to see what someone's maximum is. There's a few different variables that we'll look at. So like, you know, what range of motion they're working within, what weight they're working at, how fast they're able to execute a rep, and whether their form is staying nice or whether their form is kind of like falling to shit. Because your body is always going to try and pick the most mechanically advantaged and like easiest way of doing something. Your nervous system is really freaking smart. So it's always going to try and adapt. Like if you have a weak muscle in a certain area, say you had a stress fracture in your pelvis. And so the glutes on that side are really weak because you were offloading it. Maybe you were walking on a crutch for a while. That whole side is impaired. If you go to squat, your body is naturally going to shift your weight onto your stronger side. It might toe you out a little bit to try and cheat to put that muscle in a more advantaged area. So there's a lot of like little quirks, biomechanical hacks that your nervous system is going to do without you even realizing it to make it easier on your body. And so you're looking at like, okay, if you're doing a set of five, for example, and by the fourth rep, you're really slowing down, that tells me you're getting pretty close to capacity. If your form is starting to fall apart, so say you're doing a squat and your butt shoots up first and then you stand up, well, that tells me that your body is trying to do this like a cheat to make it easier for you. And you've reached capacity because you're not able to do this with correct form anymore. There's lots of little things like that. You know, you're shifting your weight off of your weaker side because you're trying to cheat because your weaker side has reached capacity. Horses, same thing. So for example, I was at a course last fall where we were doing, like it was an advanced equine rehab course. And we had this little Peruvian Paso with like, just, and he looked like a bulldog. Like his front end was just so built and jacked up and his back end was just jello. Like there was no glutes, no quads, no hamstrings, nothing. You could just like, you know, like he was just basically no muscle on the back end because he's just pulling himself along with his front end all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after running through our assessment kind of screening to make sure there's no neurological issues or anything like that, that could potentially be contributing to this, making, you know, screening saddle fit, all of that stuff. Then we're looking at, okay, like what is he capable of? And we asked the owner, like, what have you been doing? And she said, well, I've been doing hill walking with him because I've heard that's really good for strengthening the hind end. And I'm like, okay, great. Fantastic. How much hill walking? And she said, we've been doing about 20 minutes a day. I'm like, okay. Looking at this horse going, I don't know if this horse could do 20 minutes of hill walking. And so I said, let's go out. Let's try it. Let's walk him up and down a slope a couple times. And you could see within like the first pass of the slope, you know, pushing up and then like even trying to back down. He was pretty square. He was doing pretty well, but he was starting to get shaky in his hind end. And by the second pass, oh, he's wiggling all over the place. He's trying to go sideways. He's trying to turn around. He's trying to do all of these things to make it easier on himself. He's like toeing out in the back end, all of this stuff, whereas like his nervous system is basically saying, okay, we've reached our capacity. So now we've got to start cheating to make this happen.
Yeah.
And so I looked at her and I said, okay, 20 minutes isn't actually doing much for your horse because at that stage, like after two passes on this hill, your horse has reached capacity and now they're just cheating. And not in a bad way, but their body is trying to find a more mechanically advantageous way of doing something in order to make it happen. And it's the same if you watch a dressage horse, say a young dressage horse that, of course, it's a balance between their body and their brain at that point, but yeah, you watch a young dressage horse be able to execute something. And like I said, maybe you're performing a shoulder in, or maybe you're performing a half pass and they get three or four strides before they start throwing their butt out. They start throwing their shoulder out. They start getting wiggly. They start doing weird things. And then you kind of say, okay, that horse has reached physical capacity at that point, because like, obviously they understood the ask because they did a few steps well, and then they reached either mental capacity or physical capacity, one or the other. If you're looking at more aerobic signs, then you're definitely looking at, you know, how responsive is your horse off the leg, how, what's their body language like, what's their head carriage like, all this kind of stuff. And you can kind of get a sense of what their mental state is like as well, based on that, right? Because say you're going out with a polo pony and, you know, after 5 minutes, out on the field and you're like, you're just not getting anything off of your leg and they're not as sharp to your aids. They're not churning nearly as accurately. And you kind of realize at that point, okay, they've probably reached capacity. They either need a break and you need a fresh horse, or, Like you need to come off the pitch, you need to do something, you know, you need to give them some sort of break because they've reached a point where they can't perform anymore. So that's a few different things. Like you're looking at sort of where are they cheating, right? If they're cheating right off the bat, sometimes they just don't understand the question. Like you're not asking it correctly. So you play around with regressing the exercise then. So bringing it back to a walk or bringing it, you know, maybe a canter is easier for them to bring it up to a canter, asking for smaller steps. Maybe instead of a half pass, you try to, you know, you go back to a leg yield and you just say, let's just work on side to side off of my aids. So stuff like that. And then if they understand the ask, then you're looking at what point do they just kind of like start to compensate and do weird things. And again, that is assuming that the rider is asking correctly and it's not the rider getting tired, which isn't bringing it back to like the treat yourselves as athletes kind of thing. But at the same time, you're, you know, assuming that the rider's asking correctly and the rider's asking the same every time, as soon as the horse starts to show those cheats or starts to slow down and get less responsive, you know, you're reaching that point where they're at capacity and they might not be able to give you what you're asking. So there's no point asking for more at that point. You either regress the exercise or you give them a break and try again. Because you're not going to get any more at that point. You're asking a fatigued horse to perform for you. They're not going to learn anything and all they're going to do is compensate. So you're not actually loading their system in a correct way that's going to get you results at the end of the day and going to get you to build them in a correct way.
Yeah, I mean, wow, I couldn't agree more. And it makes so much sense. But it's one of those things that, like, of course it makes sense. It's like, it's almost, I would argue, logical, right? But that's what makes it so easy to understand. But you have to say it out loud for someone to, like, hear it. And
absolutely.
I was curious when you were talking about, like, the horse and the rider, like, how often do you find that it's mostly the rider's fault? Or versus the horse's fault in like training exercises, mostly the riders, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say like 95% it's the rider, but it's not, that's not to say that in like a faulting or blaming way, right? Because like we're all learning, you know, I'm not a Grand Prix dressage rider. I am not a high level jockey. I am not a high level eventer. Like you put me on a Grand Prix horse and I'm not going to be able to ask correctly either. So you're allowed to learn and riders are allowed to learn, but I think it's also recognizing when you are the limiting factor and being able to say, okay, now I'm the problem. I'm tired. I need to take a break. Because what I find is the tradition within the sports, especially in English sports, you know, I haven't competed in a lot of Western sports myself, so, or even endurance sports. So I don't, you know, I can't quote so much on that, but in English sports, I find our pattern is to just go out and just like ride, you know, like, okay, I'm going to ride for 40 minutes a day. And it's like, just like aimless flat work. There's not really a plan. We're not really paying attention that well. Maybe we're kind of practicing some of the drills that we were practicing in our lesson, or maybe we're doing a little bit of grid work because the jumps happen to be set up. Like who knows, but it's not well structured. And I find when it's not well structured, we also don't necessarily have a great stopping point in our mind of like, you know, most of us say, okay, I'm going to ride for 40 minutes and 40 minutes is the stopping point, but not, okay, I'm going to work on my leg yield or I'm going to work on, you know, this grid and I'm going to do like 8 passes of this grid. And my aim by the time that I've done my 8th pass is to have like my horse really rounding and like a nice bascule on the last oxer or something like that. So like, if you go in with a goal and something in mind, then it's not like a time that you're specifically trying to hit. It's like, this is what I was aiming for and this is what I completed. And if you think about like it in human terms, that's the same way that, you know, humans typically train. Like, yes, if you're doing just straight endurance sports, maybe you're going for time. Like if you're going out for a 40 minute easy run, for example, but if you're working on any skill, there's a goal at the end of the day. You want to say, I have completed, you know, 5 sets of this squat at this weight, or I have been able, you know, I was doing a clean and jerk and I did however much of that. And I worked on this particular skill. Like I worked on getting it really snappy from here to here, something like that. And with horses, it needs to be the same way. Like you need to approach your ride saying, I have this goal that I'm trying to accomplish. And then once you accomplish that, then you can just say, okay, cool, I'm done. Or if you're not on the right track and you're not getting there, you know, you're not getting there, either your horse is tired or you're not in the right frame of mind, or you've reached a point where your endurance is the limiting factor or your accuracy of your aids is the limiting factor. You also can know to take a pause. Mm-hmm. And so really when it comes to like riders being the limiting factor, I find it's very common, but the issue isn't necessarily that it's that they are the limiting factor. The issue is that they don't recognize it and they think it's the horse. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to all of that, like treating ourselves as athletes, right? Because I find when we as riders are cross training and strength training, we become much more aware of our own bodies. We become much more aware of our own limitations. At what point our cardio gets tapped out? At what point our endurance or our muscular or whatever gets tapped out? And we can recognize that better in the saddle. So that it's not necessarily that, okay, this horse just isn't doing what I ask anymore. It's like, oh, well, of course this horse isn't doing what I ask because my aids have become so sloppy 40 minutes in because I'm tired.
Nice.
So that's okay. It's okay to recognize that you get tired, but it's like you have to recognize it and not just continue to push the horse or continue to push the drill when you're not getting any more out of it because either they or you have capped out.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think back to some of the times where, you know, I was riding or I was trying to figure out what was wrong with the horse and sweating down. I'm like sweating, I'm like breathing heavy. And I'm like, I wonder, you know, was it the horse? And I was like, no, at the end of the day, I think probably at that moment in time, it was probably me.
Yeah. And that's okay. And that's where it's like, it's okay to be, you know, like all athletes, you know, the whole point is that you kind of reach your limit and you kind of reach a point where you're going to be making mistakes, and that's okay because that's how you learn. That's how you push yourself, but it's also recognizing it too. And that's where I find the struggle is sometimes is that because we don't train off horse that much as like equestrians athletes as a whole, we're not as in tune with that bit of ourselves. I'll say it's getting better as well, but I still say like, I still see the vast, vast majority of like amateur and, you know, low level professional riders as well. Don't recognize that aspect of themselves. Don't train that aspect of themselves as athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, like, I like to think, I don't know if this is true, but I like to think that a lot of people listening to this podcast are, you know, taking sets out and like just listening to something, right? And like, I'm curious, from your perspective, what is some low-hanging fruit that riders could do to improve them, like what they're doing today? You know, like something so easy, something to take away from this call.
Absolutely, I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. I think looking at the regular activity guidelines of like this is sort of the bare minimum that the average person needs to be healthy, not even just to be an athlete. And those activity guidelines state that like we should as a population be hitting 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity a week, cardio activity, and we should be hitting 2 resistance training sessions a week that are targeting all of our major muscle groups. So one really easy thing that I tell a lot of riders is like do a little crowdfund at your barn to get some equipment, like just in the corner of the tack room. I don't care if it's like the cheapest Facebook marketplace, whatever you can find, but if you get like a yoga mat, maybe like a TRX or a suspension system that you can throw over the top of the door, maybe some adjustable dumbbells or an adjustable kettlebell, like try and get something that can go fairly heavy, like up to 50 pounds. And then like literally maybe like a step stool or something. And that like, you know, those 4 or 5 pieces of equipment, probably under $400 or $500 for all of it, especially if you can like source it used. And post COVID, there's a lot of used fitness equipment out there, I'll say. And just like have that available to your barn. And then you finish up your ride. So say, you know, the other complaint I get a lot of the time is people saying, well, I'm riding 5 days a week and I've got kids and I've got a full-time job. Where do I fit this in? And I ask them, do you have to ride 5 days a week? Is that necessary for your level of sport and your goals and what you're trying to accomplish? Or is it just like you're going out and have it like that's your social time, that's whatever, you find that it's relaxing. That's fine too. But then it's like, so is riding 5 days a week necessary? And if it is, can you cut 1 or 2 of those rides by 20 minutes and sub in some resistance training either before or after your ride, especially if you have the equipment available at the barn? It doesn't have to be complicated, but if we break down like a really simple workouts, maybe got some squat pattern stuff, maybe has some deadlifting pattern stuff, maybe has some upper body pushing and pulling stuff, like 4 movements. And then if you want, throw a core thing in there. Like 4 or 5 movements, that's like, you know, 20, 25 minutes of exercises with some really basic equipment. Cut your rides twice a week and just sub in 15 or 20 minutes of this stuff. I guarantee within a few weeks, the difference that you will see in your riding is going to be astronomical. I think the other thing too is that the majority of riders who do engage in like off horse fitness, I'm putting that in quotations because a lot of like the equestrian specific exercises you see out there are not fantastic. they're not intense enough. The reason being they're not intense enough, right? So remember like when we kind of started back at the beginning and I said like you have to take your muscles, you have to take your tissues to the point of like almost overload, to the point that like you're failing a rep or you're failing, you know, your form's falling apart in order to stimulate changes. Because if you just live within your comfort zone, you're never going to stimulate changes. Mm-hmm. And then think of like those little pink like 2 pound dumbbells and how many times you think you could lift that before you couldn't lift it again.
Like 150 times.
Many times, right? And so that's the thing is like, you know, you see these like rider specific things on Facebook and on Instagram, and they're like, you know, these little like, oh, you can do these mountain climbers, and you can do these little pink dumbbell lifts, and you can do these like, you know, crunches. Usually they're overcomplicated, and usually they're not intense enough. So stick to your basic movements, your squats, your deadlifts, your press, and your pull. And make them heavy enough to actually challenge your muscles close to failure. And it doesn't take a lot of time and you will see a massive effect at the end of the day.
Mm. That's actually really interesting, really good advice, because I find now that you're calling it out, but I've noticed obviously that like the best riders are always my friends, the ones who are the most fit, the ones who are the most physically fit were also the captain of the polo team. They were also the best riders, right? They could hit the ball the hardest, right? And of course, I'm talking from my experience in polo, but that always motivated me to like go on a run and say, okay, fine. If they're doing this and they're doing good, then maybe, you know, if I do it as well.
Well, the bar is so low to make change. Like I'll tell you a story. Like my first prelim competition I ever did. So the preliminary level is like, I want to say 3.6 in North America. And so like prelim level event and competition. The other thing about your first, like when you upgrade from training, which is the level below to prelim, is that the speed at which you have to go actually that's the biggest speed jump within so like at training level, your speed for cross country is 450 meters per minute. Once you jump up to the prelim level, it's 520 meters per minute. So you're trying to get an extra 70 meters. So my first prelim competition ever, I had this little mare named Oprah. She was fantastic. But I found that Oprah, yeah, she was like this little 15-2 like thoroughbred cross black pony. She was really cute. And she could jump. I was way too big for her, but she could jump. And I made it about halfway around the course and I thought I was dying. Like my cardio was not good enough. And I had been like competing training, so I thought I was fit enough. I made it halfway on the course and I was like, literally, I could have made a really bad mistake. Thankfully, she was a very scopey jumper and she saved my butt over the second half of that course. Nice. But like, that was a dangerous situation because I was so fatigued and I was just holding on. And we did have a run out at one point, and I was actually like really impressed that I didn't just fall. That wasn't even her being bad. She was just like, well, you're not there anymore, so I'm going to go this way. And after that, it was kind of this stark awakening of like, okay, well, I need to be fitter. Obviously, I need to do something. And so I literally just started running and like no training plan, no program. Again, like I just went out and started running a couple days a week, which is, you know, like there's much better ways to do that. Realistically, like having some basic training program would have helped me way more. But just doing that, within a few weeks, I was like, holy crap, I am so much better at this now. Like my cardio fitness and everything went up so fast because I didn't realize how much a difference that simple little addition and not even doing it well, made. And that's where I say like the bar is so low to see improvements, because like when you just add something as simple as a couple 20 minute runs, I was like, so the improvements were so fast. I didn't even realize how bad I had been.
I think there is something out there. I don't know if I must have seen it on TikTok, but it was like a cut from TV or something that said the biggest advantage for folks is like if you go from the couch from 0 to 3 hours a week of exercise, that's when you see the biggest like jump in improvement versus someone who's already doing 3 hours or 4 hours a week going to 8 hours. They won't see the exponential growth that someone from 0 to 3 might. And so it's so true. Like as equestrian athletes, maybe the bar is so low because we equate our writing with exercise when in reality we should be seeing them as two separate parts of our life, right? Like equestrian, you know, writing or whatever is one part of it, and it's for fun, and maybe it's your mental health, and maybe it's if you're, especially if you're like a recreational writer like us, you know, a little bit less on the amateur level of competition, versus it's like, hey, like also you also have to exercise, like your horse deserves it. Do it for
yeah dinner. No, your horse is not your gym. Like that's yeah. one that I need to get put on a t-shirt or something. And I still look at Mae Sheridan, who does the activate your seat, but your horse is not your gym. Like you should be an athlete showing up for your horse with all those athletic pieces in place so that you can be the partner for your horse, and you are not the limiting factor in their performance. Yeah. But if you're showing up like, I'm doing riding to get fit. I heard, this is the one that I hear all the time. It's like, I heard riding's great for strengthening your legs. I heard riding's great for strengthening your core. And I'm like, no, that's not the point is you should have strong legs and a strong core to ride, not that you should be riding to get strong, because your horse is a living being and they deserve to have an athlete show up to be a partner for them, not a non-athlete show up to use them as a tool to get fit.
Totally. I'm curious, and only because we're coming up on time here, I want to talk a little bit about like the innovations, right, in equine care and equine rehab, and like perhaps how you keep up to date with like with all these things. You know, obviously there's so many different aspects of it, from barefoot to, you know, what we're talking about now. Like, how do you keep up with innovations in equine care? What do you look for? What are you excited about? I know those are a lot of questions, but that's kind of like the theme for the last.
I will say, unfortunately, I'm rather a cynic actually when it comes to a lot of those new sort of like newfound kind of approaches. And I will say, I think the majority of where we should be going is just taking from other sports and taking how other athletic and training principles are used in other sports and bringing that into equestrian. I find a lot of like the quick fixes, the gadgets, the things that you see advertised of like, you know, it does this and it does that. So for example, like PEMF blankets, so the magnetic, you know, pulsing blankets, or like red light therapies, or, you know, like there's a bunch of different electro units that are out on the market. Those are unfortunately marketed in a way that they sound very appealing, where they'll say like, okay, this increases blood flow by 20% and this reduces muscle tension by 40%. And this will, you know, improve your horse's, like reduce your horse's pain. And it's like, it's true. Yes, they probably do some of those things, but they're incredibly expensive. And you know what else does those things really well is just a good exercise program. Like a good training program, like take your horse for a walk, and I bet you'll increase their blood flow by more than 20%.
We're so used to the cheat codes, right? Like, what's the easiest way to lose weight?
And they're fashionable. Yeah, they're fashionable. That like this person has the $6,000 blanket, so my horse must have the $6,000 blanket. And this person is doing this weird little cryotherapy, so my horse requires this fancy cryotherapy. And it's not necessary 90% of the time. And so like when it comes to, you know, I do a lot of research, I read a lot of articles, I listen to a lot of podcasts. Most of what I take and I bring to the equine rehab sphere, I take from the human side of things. So for example, if I am treating a suspensory desmopathy in a horse, I am drawing on my knowledge of Achilles tendinopathy in humans. If I am treating a laminitic pony, I am drawing on my knowledge of working with diabetics in humans. And it's all the same principles, you know, like for example, I was working with a little laminitic pony a little while ago, and she had a non-healing sort of wound on her back leg. And the owner was asking about this and that. And I said, well, we treat it like she's a diabetic with an ulcer on her foot. So you're trying to increase blood flow. You're trying to increase your cardio capacity. You're trying to overall make her fitter, because that's going to help with her insulin, like her sensitivity to insulin, like all of these things. And then like, we're treating that wound in a way where we're trying to get as much blood flow and stimulus to the area as possible. And, you know, that's kind of like, that's taken all from my knowledge of working with diabetic humans. Same with like sports injuries is all taken from my knowledge of working with humans. And that is something that I find is innovative to the equestrian community, even though like to physios, it's like, well, that's, of course we would do it that way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do tend to stay away from the gadgets and the electromodalities because I find too often they are overpriced and they're used as a crutch. And owners and riders forego the actual basics that are shown to, like, will have a more beneficial effect in order to incorporate the fancy gadgets. I usually tell people, like, if time and money are not a limiting factor, most of these things don't do harm. So, like, feel free to incorporate them, but don't forego the things that we know that you need to do, the loading, the progressive slow rehab programs, in order to just, like, you know, say, oh, I'm not going to hand walk. I'm just going to use the red light therapy.
Right.
I know that's an extreme, but.
Yeah, it's just so easy to forego the because it takes a lot of discipline, right? It takes a lot of discipline to do all the things that you're talking about. And it takes a lot of, sometimes a lot of time and work, and people have to rewire their brains. And when you can buy a, you know, $6,000 Beamer blanket and put it on your horse and have a good time, like, all right, cool. You know, like, do all.
Yep.
What's the saying? It's like, you do you, right? Like,
but like, most people are not applying them with very much. Like, they're not judicious in the way that they're applying them. They're saying, oh, I'm just going to put this blanket on and it says it increases blood flow 20%. And that's great. But I usually say, okay, so one, is this product better than something else? Not like two, you know, is it better? So one, is it better than something else? Too, is there actually, like, evidence to support it, right? Because, like, a lot of these products, the other thing is that if you look at the research behind them, most of it's, like, done in-house, or it's, like, anecdotal, or it's a case study. It's not, like, an actual, like, proper research trial. And then the other thing too is, like, okay, say maybe you have a product that actually has some good research behind it and is actually probably better than something else. You know, that's rare, but maybe it happened. Then how are you testing it? How are you, like, testing? So say your goal is to, you know, you want to use this Beamer blanket to reduce the tension across your horse's back. How are you going to test that before you put the Beamer blanket on? How are you going to test that after you take the Beamer blanket off to make sure that it actually worked? You know, and then at the end of the day, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. If it's working and you have proof that it's working for your horse, you have proof, like, scientific evidence to say that it's actually useful. And then you also have scientific evidence to say that it is better than all of the other things. Absolutely use it. But honestly, majority of time, those checkboxes are not checked for most of these products.
I'm curious, how do you approach your own? Do you have horses of your own now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you?
I do. I have thoroughbred.
Oh, nice. How do you approach, like, your own training and your own for yourself and for your horse? Like, how is that? Obviously, we've talked, you know, for an hour about kind of, like, what you're saying, but, like, in the day to day, like, what's, maybe break it down so a little bit more digestible for someone, you know? It's like, how do you do it? Like, how does the teacher do it, you know?
Well, I will say my horse is not an epitome of athleticism right now because I got him the summer I had that car accident, and was intended to be a resale project at the time. I got him from a lady who lives in Northern Ontario, and he was just, like, far too much for her. So I was like, well, I'll take him to a couple, like, eventing schooling shows and sell him at the end of the year for a few grand. And then I got in that car accident, and, you know, basically my aunt, you know, called me up and said, bring him here. We'll take care of him. Don't worry about anything. You just get better. And he stayed there ever since. So really all we do now is mainly just some hunting in the fall and some hunter paces and some easy stuff in the summer. So he's not actually that athletic, but I will say, like, I'm never going to ask him to do something that I haven't properly prepared him for. Right. So if we want to go out for a 4-hour hunt in the fall, I need to make sure that his cardio base is there. I need to make sure that I have been hacking him and taking him out on trail and maybe doing some flat work and some more higher intensity work regularly. So some gallop intervals regularly for months, you know, probably starting in, like, April, June, if our goal is to hunt in the fall. And so that would break down to, like, maybe I do, like, 1 or 2 flat days a week that are potentially have a goal to work on some suppleness. Like, we're not competing in any flat work dressage type stuff. So we're mostly just working on his elasticity, his mobility, his suppleness. And I'll go out with a goal for one of those rides. Say, okay, today I'm going to school some lateral work because I want to work on him moving off of my leg side to side really well. Or today I'm going to work on transitions because I really want to work on flexion and I want to work on his suppleness kind of front to back. And that I'll go out and I'll maybe do 30 minutes of that with that goal in mind, depending on the day. If he's not having it and neither of us are there for it, we do less. If both of us are having a great time, maybe we do more. And then a couple times a week, I might take him out like one day a week for just a really long, like 1 or 2 hour hack. He's in a really nice area where there's not really any fences between properties, and you can just hack around on other, you know, on the back of like all the way along a concession line for forever. It's dirt roads. It's great. And then maybe one day we do some interval work. So if I'm starting him up, say I'm starting him up, like even now that the ice is coming off the roads, I probably will be starting riding him more. And that might look like, you know, we're starting with literally like a 1 to 2 minute trot sets of like 3 reps. Because I know he's coming off a winter of basically babysitting yearlings, and he's been out, I want to say we've gone out like 5 times all winter. So.
Yeah.
So we're starting with that, but then I'm working him up to being able to do like a fairly, you know, fast paced, canter as part of the hunt field for, you know, up to five or like 10 minutes would be a stretch, but like 5+ minutes straight. So then, you know, if I work backwards, even from like, okay, I know by like late August, early September, he has to be able to do that. And then I'm going to work backwards kind of week by week, ideally keeping the jumps in what we're asking him in like, you know, for the human rules, I say like 5 to 7% range in either increase in volume or speed. Horses generally, like I keep it around the same way. So if you're doing an increase in speed, so say I'm going from a trot set to a canter set, I'm maybe adding one of, like replacing one of those trot sets with a canter, and I'm not increasing volume, I'm not increasing the time we're doing it. Or if I'm increasing time, then we're sticking to trot, we're just sticking to canter, one or the other. For my own fitness, and I say I approach my fitness more from just like a general health perspective and like longevity in my career and the fact that I work with horses, and if I don't work out, I will be beaten up. And so like, I lift 3 days a week and I do 3 days a week of cardio conditioning. I don't like to run. So not that there's anything wrong with running, it's just never been my favorite. So I hike, I'll go hiking and I get my heart rate up and I work my cardio base that way. And then, you know, once one day a week, I might do intervals on the treadmill or I might do some speed work to kind of like get a little bit faster. But I do 3 days a week lifting, and one day is for squatting, one day is for deadlifting, one day is for bench pressing. And then I do some accessory work on top of that. So really, like, it's not complicated for me. Like, my workouts are probably about an hour, but that is more than the average person needs. I do it because I enjoy it, and I do it because, you know, it's a little bit like embodying,
you're right,
the, you know, the message that I'm trying to get across.
Yeah. Absolutely. Actually, yeah. Speaking of that, like, maybe, you know, kind of to round us out today is a little bit more about the Equestrian Physio business, right? Like, what do you offer? How can people get in touch with you? What's the type of problem that you solve the best? You know, and then we can just round it out from there.
Absolutely. So I offer kind of a variety of services. Like, I am primarily a physiotherapist, but I can only use my physiotherapist title when I'm practicing within Ontario. So like, I live in Ontario, Canada, and my license only extends to the border of Ontario. But that doesn't mean I don't work with people internationally. I definitely do. I just don't, like, I work as a consultant, technically. That's what my insurance says, not as a physiotherapist. But it's all through the same scope. So under the Equestrian Physio, I have a few services that I offer. One of the main ones is my rider performance / rehab program. So it's a monthly membership that kind of encompasses, like, you have 1-to-1 sessions with me, you have a fully customized strength and conditioning program or rehab program, depending on what our goals are. And you have full email support from me in between. And the reason being that I started approaching this as a membership rather than just kind of like ad hoc people booking appointments with me is because what I found is that people would book an appointment with me and then they'd never actually incorporate what they learned, because, and not that it's their fault, but it's just like life gets in the way. So you might have a session with me where we go through a full physical assessment and maybe we look at your riding videos and we do some biomechanics reviews and I give you some exercises and I give you some, a bit of a program to work on. And then I'll send an email out to them like 3-4 weeks later being like, how's it going? And they'll say, oh, I actually haven't had a chance to do anything because life got busy. Which is, I mean, yeah, we are busy. So what I found is that, like, yeah.
Classic also.
What I found is that when I kind of created the membership program, what it allows is an extra element of accountability and an extra element of, like, a framework. So that one, people, like, you're paying into this, so that you're even held a little bit accountable by the fact that, like, you're paying money to get this. And two, because like you're meeting with me every other week, I'm in your inbox every week, you have full email support from me, and you have this program that I'm actually like checking to see that you're filling it out, there's all of these layers of like something external to hold you to it, so that it's not just, you know, and this is the same with like a lot of riding clinics, I find, is that the clinician comes out and they do the assessment and you'd have the lesson and they give you all these things. And then 3 weeks later, you've forgotten everything and you've gone back to your old ways because no one held you to it and like helped you incorporate it. And that was what I was finding, is that I'd give people all of this information and all of these things that they could work on. And then they would just fall off because nothing was helping them actually integrate it. So that's what the membership is intended to be. It's intended to be either we're working towards a performance goal or we are working towards a rehab goal if you're coming off of an injury. And all of these pieces are in place to create a framework for you, whether it is, you know, education as well, whether it is like the framework of the exercises, videos, email support, all of it. And at the end of the day too, the goal of this program is because like, I don't want to be married to my clients forever. Like I want them to actually develop the education, the knowledge, the skills to continue on their own. So I'm working with a rider right now and her big goal is to be able to program for herself. So like every one of our sessions, you know, she's got the strength and conditioning program, but we're layering in more and more concepts of strength and conditioning so that at the end of the day, she can do that for herself. Some riders, they want to seek to understand their injury. So we're layering in a lot of educational components for that. So that's the program. And that's kind of like I said, you just pay into it monthly. And I work with riders that way. I also do like equine work as well. So like I said, I treat horses mostly locally, just because of kind of like laws and like the veterinary acts and logistics. I have to, because I'm not a veterinarian, I have to be working under a veterinarian technically. So like a veterinarian has to acknowledge that I'm on the case and that I'm working with that horse. So I'm not just like practicing veterinary medicine illegally. And it's all the same principles. So I usually say I approach all of my equine cases the exact same way I would a human, where we do the evaluation, we look at the injuries, we look at the imaging, and we come up with a plan and a list of here are all the impairments that this horse is working with. And then we come up with solutions, interventions, or treatments to help deal with all those impairments. And that is that. And then we progress it. We continue to progressively build to get that horse back to, same as people, to get that horse back to whatever they're trying to accomplish. A little bit on the side as well, I do workshops, I do clinics. I'm going to Boston in May for a couple of days to work with a farm out there, several riders. Another one, a lady I've been chatting back and forth with in California that's probably going to have me out this summer. So like I'll fly out to different farms to do clinics. And then I do workshops as well. Like I'm running one this weekend that's got about 20 people and it's just strength and conditioning for equestrians. That will be going up on my website as well for as like webinars and stuff. Absolutely. And I write programs. So I write strength and conditioning programs that are kind of just like generic. They're not specific to any person, but you can just go on my website and you can purchase those. And they're just kind of general strength and conditioning based on your level of experience and kind of what your goals are. That's very long-winded, but...
No, thank you so much for hopping on the pod and talking a little bit about the physio side and you know, really, you are so passionate about it and it comes off. And I think especially the education piece, right? I think that's like where you stand out from the rest, is you're so passionate about the education piece. Your social media is like one of the best follows I've had in the last few weeks when we started chatting. And I was like, oh my God, like all these things, they're so actionable. And, long story short, thanks so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate you inviting me. No, this has been great.